the Wednesday evening session, April 20th, of the 10th Annual Service Conference of AA, April 20th, 1960.
Dear people, I was terribly afraid that an address would be required, and sensing that, I rushed upstairs to get a little powder for my false teeth. So if I stood you up, think nothing of it. This is the 25th anniversary year of our fellowship. It is the 22nd year of our trusteeship, and it is the 10th year of this conference on which so much of our destiny depends. I wish I had the capability to communicate to you what these 25 years have meant to us, to Lois and to me, what the trusteeship has meant, what the labors and the demonstration of this conference has meant. Well, I really can't do that. I can just make a stab at it. At a time like this, before thinking about today or tomorrow, old-timers like Lois and me think about the past. I think that a key word, which was by which you might convey some little part of what has happened, might be the word communication, now coming so much in the forefront of our minds. When you think about it, AA is a unique means of communication. Our lives have depended on communication. Our unity depends on communication. Our functioning depends on communication. I had lunch with Father Kennedy, who asked me to speak at the clergy conference on alcoholism. And he said that questions might be asked there. After all, the church has this tremendous spiritual base. But here is a society that says that it has a spiritual basis. Why hasn't the church done this with its resources? Well, he said that question might come up, and I said, I think the answer, Father, is very simple. The church has the spirituality, but in the case of us drunks, it didn't have the communication to pave the way, one alcoholic to the next, for the grace to descend. So you have the spirituality, some of which we have borrowed, and we fellows have the communication, so therefore, in no competition at all, we can do together that which we cannot do in separation. So everything is hung on this business of communication. And I think that I can think back on a time when there was virtually none. Lois and I were isolated, drawing further apart, each in retreat. No communication. Dr. Silkworth makes a communication, it takes some hold on us. First of hope, and then happily of hopelessness. My sponsor sits across the kitchen table, on which there was no coffee. In those days it was gin. And then the unique communication starts, one grunts talking to another. So it has been. It has been a story of communication. Well, this conference is a great network of communication. And as the time approached, I tried to visualize how firmly this effort is beginning to rest on a base composed literally of thousands of interested people, trusted servants, working at this business of functioning worldwide. Thousands of GSRs, hundreds and hundreds of committee you delegates. I tried to imagine you going about your appointed tasks in the year past. What have you been saying? What have you been feeling? What have you been doing? How many thousands of miles have you traveled? How many man, and yes, woman hours have you put in? So that this meeting might be yet another success, our 10th. So first of all, on behalf of AA Worldwide and all of us who work here in the headquarters, and especially for Lois and me, our warmest affection, our deepest thanks for all that has been done to bring us together in this fine hour. On these occasions, I'm expected to make introductions, but we at headquarters at last became so very numerous that I've been warned against it. I don't like the warning, but it has been made authoritatively, and I think I shall have to heed it, with a few exceptions. Now, whilst you delegates were running high, wide, and handsome over the land, I think of all the good women, the wives who sat home, or who used to sit home, but they don't anymore. We have something called Al-Anon, and some of you wives belong to that, and you are our guests, and as I have stood for AA in my way, so has Lois stood for the Al-Anon. So I think that we'll put the ladies in the introductions, even ahead of the Board of Trustees, Lois.
And welcome to the 10th? Is it 10th?
Yes, I said so, I'm not sure.
This 10th conference. And it's so nice to see old faces that I've known before and many, many new ones also. And Bill and I are looking forward very much to seeing you all, everyone, up at our house on Saturday evening for supper. And as Bill said, the Al-Anon is really beginning to, AA has come of age, but we're beginning just to toddle. And we have quite a program, though, for the wives of the delegates, whether they be Al-Anon members or not. And We have a very fine chairman who has arranged lots of interesting things. And I thought maybe I don't know whether this is according to the authority or not, but anyway, we'll ask Sue, who's our chairman, to stand up if she will. We have a room up at 523, and most of the ones have registered, but they haven't all. And will everybody who hasn't, please go to 523, and it's also a place where wives can meet when they have something special to do and talk things over and rest. And I want to make one more introduction, and that's the gal who helped me so much in starting the Al-Anon headquarters here in New York. And will you stand up, Ann Bale? And again, I want to say how nice it is to see you all, and I'm looking forward to seeing you on Saturday. Thank you very much.
A brief exception to those remarks. I will not hold with Lois's declaration that the Al-Anons are toddlers. And I'll tell you why. Back in 1950, the office began to get a little record of these groups. Couldn't we be listed in the directory? I think they had about 75 of them. The total is now is something like 1,400. And since we last met, one of these new groups has sprung into being someplace in the world every single day of the year, which is a pace that I would estimate as a little more rapid than toddling. And it's wonderful and one of the best things that can happen. An awful lot of good things have happened to us in the last year. First of all, I want to add these remarks about the delegates. Now, my congratulations for the fashion in which the bills are being paid. It's just marvelous, the job that's being done. And I can say that the progress of this third legacy idea, the growing knowledge, the growing sense of responsibility throughout AA is really more rapid than was the adoption of the traditions, which have now become so firmly embedded and so cast iron that indeed we have a class of gentlemen that I call a tradition lawyer, whose constructions of the tradition are so strict that, I hardly know them sometimes. I made notes for this, and it spoiled everything. It's usual at this time to give a little rundown, and we come now to the topic of this trusteeship of ours and how it happened. And in a way, it was the first great and momentous change in our affairs. In those days, 1938 to be exact, AA was a matter of coffee and cake. It was the time of halcyon simplicity, and we were almost a secret society, and there was no public relations. Nothing of that kind. But we began to see, a few of us, that we would have to get into the communication business in a big way. First of all, how was this message to be transferred from us very few to the millions of drunks who surrounded us, some within gunshot? Well, that meant publicity. There was the question of literature. this message could be very seriously garbled. There had to be literature. Somehow the experience of the few groups had to be transmitted to the new ones formed. So it meant that we had to have here, in the middle of AA, an overall service project that could do for AA what the groups or areas couldn't do for themselves. And this was the beginning of our trusteeship. What our friends, the non-alcoholics, have done for this society is beyond anybody's estimate. And of course, my mind goes back to those first few, and now it turns to their successors. And we have two of them here tonight. There are many absentees on this occasion, all for very good reasons, but I'm just delighted and my heart is very full to present first Jack Norris. We talk a great deal about dedication. We talk a great deal about 12-step work. I don't know of any dedication that Jack Norris hasn't matched in his devotion to this society and indeed to this whole vast problem of alcoholism. I present you, Jack. There was a time, and there still is, when we needed friends, as we need them now in ever-increasing numbers. But these first friends, of course, filled a dire and critical need. And I think of the next friend I'd like to introduce, as he must have looked at the pre-publication copy of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, still in a monolithic stage, read it through. As he since said, it ran very much contrary to a good deal of his philosophy. And yet he had the insight and the open-mindedness to say, this I will try. And he handed it to a gal patient, we all know as Marty today. She read the book, it made her mad, she threw it out the window. She got drunk, the book was retrieved, she read it some more. She came to Brooklyn, where the meeting was then in our house. You could put them all in the little parlor. And she came back to the sanitarium where Harry was and said, we aren't alone anymore. Harry saw her recover. Ever since that day, he has held up the hands of our society before the whole world and before his sometimes hard to convince profession. This is a brand of dedication and courage and love, which I wish I could duplicate myself. Now we come to the hop, skip, and jump part. Just for the benefit of the new delegates, we all know each other pretty well, I'm going to ask our alcoholic trustees to stand up one by one. John Park, lead. Herb Warren. Charlie Brown. Dick Stevens. Al Speckman. And here come two gray beards in the service of AA, but new on the board, Pat Cronin. And Sam Campbell. And so that you can get a very quick look at who's who around, I'll ask the AA General Service staff to stand up. Nobody? And the Grapevine staff. And the World Service Directors. And the Grapevine Directors. Now we have some folks that we don't see so much of, except us who work here, and their dedication I would like to take special note of, and I refer to all those folks, those non-alcoholic gals and guys, who carry the routine of the Grapevine in the office. Will all you folks stand up? Well, that's that, and wasn't it nice? We're in. Still get an era of change. Our 12 steps probably won't change. The traditions, not at all likely. But our manner of communication, our manner of organizing ourselves for function or service, well, let us hope that this goes on changing for the better. Forever. There is a very natural resistance that we have toward change. We are apt to say, well, it worked very well the way it was, so why change? But after all, we have undertaken several tremendous changes. You will remember that in the very early days, people said, well, why a self-appointed trusteeship? Later, people said, why a book? And now, in 1950, very loudly, many people say, why a conference? So I cite that to show that on good evidence, with the need clearly in sight, we are indeed ready to make all kinds of changes. Not that any great changes are in prospect, but I think we ought to stay open-minded on this matter of change. We reverence the past and its lessons for so long as those teachings work. When they don't, we readapt and we reshape. That has been our history. The lessons of the past, however, are something that we ought to preserve. Sometimes we go to the other tack, throwing out the baby with the bathwater, ignoring the lessons of the past. And for these reasons, that we might want to change, but that we must also understand the past and its lessons, in connection with this service conference, I have been trying to do a set of interpretive essays, or rather articles, and have cashed up, God forbid almost, a new batch of points, or better called, 12 concepts for world service. You remember that our third legacy manual, except for its brief little historical sketch, is a manual of a procedure. It tells you the how. How do we serve as group representatives, as committeemen, as delegates, as trustees, directors, staff, and so on. Now, these essays would attempt, on the basis of the lessons of the past and of our history, to show the why of it. How did we happen to get related together in this way? And what have been the lessons? There are a few suggestions for change in these points. And of course, the basic thing to remember is that we began to function here in these services almost exactly as a group started to function. There was a little meeting in Akron in 1937, and Dr. Bob and I proposed to create something that could provide an overall service. So we got authorization. In other words, the small group conscience of that meeting of 18, by a majority of about one, incidentally, asked me to come back to New York as at least a fairly trusted servant to start this jump. Well, so Dr. Bob and I had all of the authority and all of the responsibility there was to create a service structure. And Dr. Bob, being an Akron, and since it was thought that the money we needed, the great funds we needed, would be here in New York, he sort of turned over that part of it to me. So for just a moment, I had all of the ultimate authority and the immediate authority and the responsibility to set this thing in motion. But, of course, it was instantly realized that I couldn't do this by myself. I had to have help. So, first of all, we began to get together some friends, some non-alcoholic friends, people who could take a money interest in us, people who could relate us to the world outside, people who could ensure the trusteeship in case the drunks got drunk and started to drink the money up. We needed friends, and we needed them very badly. So, very much like an AA group, this thing started with an originator and his friends. A hierarchy of service composed at first of this informal committee, along with Dr. Bob and me, to spark this thing. Well, pretty soon it was realized that if we were going to get up any money, it had to be organized. There had to be a bank account. The informal committee wouldn't do. So we formed a trusteeship, which first started off by merely an agreement among people to be trustees for AA. Indeed, the old trusteeship took in everything except lobbying for prohibition. So this became a formalized body of trustees, since actually incorporated. Well, then came the problem of what would we do for money, and none was forthcoming. So we raised money mostly around here and got the book together after a great struggle. Well, at first, the book belonged to the people who had contributed, and for my work, I had a third, and we had another promotion fellow around here with another third, and we realized that this book couldn't be the property of us. So after a while, we said, well, now this trusteeship can hold this book. So the book began to sell slowly, and some money came in, so they became the trustees for this money. And pretty soon we began to get some publicity, and in came some inquiries, and we had to have an office. So the money coming in from the book was spent to run the office, and the trustees became managers of the office. And I was just sitting in my now large office and looking at a table over in the corner. It's a kind of an antique. They insisted that it be painted. I don't know why that affronted me, because this was the table from which the first AA book was shipped, and it then sat in a little room about 20 feet square, and that was exactly 20 years ago down at Cecil Street in New York City. So we have a book, and we have an office, and we have a paid worker, and we have a board of trustees. In other words, here are the two founders, the hierarchy of service. But all the time I find that I must delegate my original authority. So now the trustees have our funds, they have the book, they have the management of the office, because the way of delegation, even though I had an ultimate authority, and at first all of it, in order to make it function, I had to hand it out. So progressively, Dr. Bob and I turned our service functions over to the Board of Trustees. Well, the office grew and its functions grew, and pretty soon we had terrific publicity, the Saturday Post piece, thousands of inquiries came in, and the book sales wouldn't pay the help in the office, so we came to the movement and we said, won't you give us some help? So those contributions began to come in from the groups on the express idea that they'd be trustees for just office purposes only, which they still are. So then the trustees came into possession of the group contributions. And in some years we'd save some book money, and that was put into a separate fund, which today has grown into a sort of a reserve. Well, by this time, we began to have a tremendous public relations problem, a very ticklish one. And we had all sorts of enthusiastic and somewhat self-appointed public relations agents out through the country. Some wished to sell life insurance in connection with AA, and others shaving soap, and it was getting pretty, well, it was like an anarchy, you know. There had to be some head and tail to it, so we write the groups and say, well, here's this body of friends. The non-alcoholics are in the majority. You're safe, boys. So you've entrusted your money, your office, your book. Why don't you entrust this body with your public relations? Then after a while, just like the book was separately set up, so was the Grapevine. And a bunch of enthusiasts got together here. There were a lot of other fine sheets around the country, but this one seemed to gain in circulation. It got to have a national subscription list. Finally, they got tired of licking the stamps. So the volunteers came and said, well, won't this trustee take this thing on? So that is how the trusteeship grew. Until 1950, it was just like an AA group, this whole movement, so far as service was going, being run by the pair of founders and their friends in this incorporated trusteeship. Well, by then, of course, we realized that this just couldn't go on forever. The ghastly open end that we then faced was that the link between this more and more unknown board of trustees, naming their successors, and the movement was getting thinner and thinner. It really depended very largely upon Dr. Bob and me and a couple of gals in the office. And we were the only people who began to have a world connection with AA. Meanwhile, the things that grew like men. And it got more and more and more vital. And then came the day when it was discovered Dr. Bob was fatally ill. And we suddenly realized that founders are perishable. So if the linkage went out and the board pulled one good boner someday, this would be the end of it, and there'd be no means of reinstatement. Well, I suppose it was the most hazardous change that we've ever undertaken, the formation of this conference. Our society wasn't so mature as it is today. Our fears were far greater. Consequently, the business of running clubs and hospital setups and even handling group matters had been awfully chaotic. So rightly, a great many people said, my God, delegates from every state of the union, and committee men, and group representatives, this will be a political chaos. So finally, the day had to come when we had to take the risk of finding whether this would be a political chaos or whether, in silence, we would let people feel that things were fine just the way they were. And the old-timers would pass off the scene and then collapse it. In other words, we had to choose between these two risks. The one of almost certain collapse later on. The other, the tremendous gamble of bringing the conference in. Well, I'm so glad that the decision for change was taken. And this ushered in a whole new era in our faith and began to put them service-wise upon a sound and permanent basis. And this involved just really to replace Dr. Bob and me, and you people who have come here stand in our shoes, you have become the linkage between our trusteeship and the movement. And you, in turn, through the committee, thanks to the GSRs, out into the groups. Well, we took the risk, and you people showed us that it wasn't a very big one. Because the success of this thing has exceeded our wildest imagination. Therefore, we enter this 25th year, stepping across one more threshold into the future. What does the future hold for us? What may its perils be like? How can we strengthen ourselves against the time of peril? To put it negatively, to put it positively, how can we increase our communication with the sea of drunks around? I realize that while on behalf of all, I have been saying nice things about us, congratulating us upon our successes so far, we ought nevertheless to soberly reflect that this society has made only the smallest scratch on the total problem of alcoholism. We've got a couple of new books coming out, by the way. The family group's got one. This adds to the communication in their field. We got one coming out today with the grapevine. Nice advanced sales. More communication. And in that book, I discuss this matter of communication. Not only on the basis of what we have so providentially been unable to accomplish, but also on the basis of what we haven't been able to do. And I took note of the fact that in this generation that has seen AA come alive, this period of 25 years, a vast procession of the world's drunks have passed in front of us and have gone over the precipice. And based on figures which I was careful to get, it looks like worldwide there were something like 25 million of them. And out of this stream of despair, illness, misery, and death, we fished out just 1 in 100 in the last 25 years. I think we're pushing somewhat bigger in fact. Now then, is it not an awful good question? And is not this question very closely related to the future of this conference? This conference is here to preserve what we've got in full measure, but how much more shall we need in the way of communication with this profession? How are we going to reach them? How are we going to make them want to approach us? This probably is our single greatest problem. I realize that while on behalf of all I have been saying nice things about us, congratulating us upon our successes so far, we ought nevertheless to soberly reflect that this society has made only the smallest scratch on the total problem of alcoholism. We've got a couple of new books coming out, by the way. The family group's got one. This adds to the communication in their field. We got one coming out today with the grapevine. Nice advanced sales. More communication. And in that book I discuss this matter of communication not only on the basis of what we have so providentially been unable to accomplish, but also on the basis of what we haven't been able to do. And I took note of the fact that in this generation that has seen AA come alive, this period of 25 years, a vast procession of the world's drunks have passed in front of us and have gone over the precipice. And based on figures which I was careful to get, it looks like worldwide there were something like 25 million of them. And out of this stream of despair, illness, misery, and death, we fished out just 1 in 100 in the last 25 years. I think we're pushing somewhat bigger in fact. Now then, is it not an awful good question? And is not this question very closely related to the future of this conference? This conference is here to preserve what we've got in full measure, but how much more shall we need in the way of communication with this profession? How are we going to reason? How are we going to make them want to approach us? This, probably, is our single great problem. Now, it is quite true that those who are just entering on this faithful path can't be reached because, well, they're young. They say it couldn't be me. Youth doesn't like to be defeated. And then they come into the area where perhaps they could be reached. And they're in there for a while. And then they pass beyond age. So how can we walk into this dream and draw more out of it? Obviously, it is by better communication. Now, this means better and bigger public relations. It means a vast increase in the friends of this society, in all the media of communication. What they have already done for us is beyond estimate. But this must be but only a beginning. How can we first reach them more effectively, and they in turn this melancholy and ever-flowing stream? That's the post. I don't know that. We must also remember that a great many of these condemned passers-by are not amenable, perhaps, to Alcoholics Anonymous. So therefore, I think we ought to begin to stretch the point. We ought to cast aside some of our early fears, however justified they were at the time, and try to remain in an attitude and to increase our friendly cooperation with whoever and whatever is trying to tackle this thing. Whether we agree with their methods or whether we don't, a lot of people are trying in different ways to make a dent on this huge problem. AA has now become so solid in its unit. The adherence to our tradition is so astonishing, really, when you stop to think of the power drivers like me who would love to butt loose at the public level, beat the tub, feather the nest, and all that sort of thing. We're just full of them. I'm one, I'm a champ. And they're just full of these people. And yet, the conformity to these traditions is beyond belief. It isn't just a matter of self-preservation. It's the spirit of AA that makes it possible. Now, all of this has grown up in the last decade so that our fear of what the mistake that other people in other efforts make, as it might affect us, I think today are far overdone. There was a time we had reason to be afraid, but I don't think so anymore. So I think that we can go a little overboard on the friendly side because these people are in touch with Trump, who may approach them but won't approach us. So therefore, we need friendliness with every possible outlet and contact with this passing stream of misery. In other words, it's a problem all around of better communication. That is looking outward upon the world in which we live, and it's looking forward. I think, too, that we can look to ourselves. Our numbers are considerable. We have size. There is a great security in numbers. You can't imagine how it was in the very earliest 2 or 3 years of this, when nobody was sure that anybody could stay sober. I mean, just for sure. Then we were like the people on Eddie Rickenbacker's raft. Boy, anybody walked that raft even a little, and it was just due to be clobbered, that's all, thrown overboard. But today, it's a very different story. So, along, however, with the big security numbers, there has come a certain amount of liability. The more people there are to do a job, it often falls out, the less they are. In other words, what's everybody's business is nobody's business. A doctor came into the office the other day from a foreign land where he is flourishing and doing darn well by any estimate. And he said that he'd referred a great many people to AA, but that the turnover seemed to him unnecessarily large, and that he had repeatedly discovered that people would come and say, yeah, I went over to the AA, I went to X number of meetings, and, well, it didn't work for me. Well, said the doctor, of course, the fellow didn't really try hard enough. But it seems to me there were other things needed. Somehow this fellow, I didn't make friends over there. Now, he wasn't a psychopath. Maybe this was partly because nobody went out of their way to make friends with him. Numbers of these people came back never having heard that Alcoholics Anonymous had 12 steps. Heard some drug stories. They saw that some people were sober. So, this question of sponsorship, which isn't just a question of a couple of visits, now you're in the group, boys. This question of loving friendship is a part of the sponsorship. So, size is bound to bring complacency unless we get increasingly aware of what's going on. So this conference, at least we who are soon to pass off the scene, believe, will be the inspiration that can overcome complacency. It will have the genius, and out of it will come a better communication with our friends and through every possible media to an increasing set of the people we have with. I have a profound confidence in the future of this conference as an instrument guaranteeing our unity and our functioning. I'm not too good in AA in spiritual sense. Kind of taught a kindergarten in some respects. I even got the first principles myself. A lot of people have done a lot better. Most of my life, in the last 15 or 20 years, has been an effort to figure out, God knows with plenty of help, how this top function can be anchored to this movement. How to keep the cupola on the old AA barn so she just can't blow off. So, I'm looking to you with utter
to keep that cupola on there. Yes, it's been 25 years. Our trusteeship is 22 years old. And you are 10 years old. And my friends, the future belongs to you.